and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love Sean Bean and Bill Paxton.
Very true. Although that is not the topic of today's conversation.
Love books.
I love books, but sometimes I doubt that I love them as much as you do.
I never doubt that I love books more than everybody.
Well, fine.
I'm full of...
You don't have doubts?
Certitude. I doubt nothing.
So today we're going to be talking about doubt.
Oh, the book, not the concept.
Yes. It's just an hour talking about the concept of doubt.
That should be our next podcast, if we get tired of having assigned reading every week.
Yeah, we can just spend an hour talking about abstract ideas.
Yeah, just like a big abstract concept every week.
Next week, justice. The week after, greed.
So it'd be kind of like Professor Blastoff, but not funny.
Well, no. I mean, you're never funny.
Well, so. Right.
Before we get started, we do have a quick, oops, we fucked up. The Crucible, which we recorded 2-3 weeks ago? Before Christmas.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
WordPress has a new sound uploading system or something, and The Crucible, while it got uploaded and was listenable on the website, did not appear on iTunes.
Yeah, or at least that's what I'm blaming it on. At any rate, it wasn't on iTunes, and I re-uploaded the file yesterday, 2 days
ago. Yeah, and
yeah.
Now it is on iTunes. So for any of our iTunes subscribers who thought we disappeared for an entire month, we did actually have something in there before we talked about Sean Bean and Bill Paxton. So if you subscribe through iTunes and want to go back and listen to The Crucible, it should be available for download.
Yeah, so if you missed that, it is up there now. Our apologies.
So moving on.
Yes.
Doubt by John Patrick Shanley, winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 2005.
Yes, or the Pulitzer Prize.
Oh.
I don't know which one it is. I've heard it both ways.
I
just wanted to make it a thing.
Now you're making me all self-conscious.
I know, I'm so sorry.
It is one of those, sometimes when you hear something wins a big award and then you go read it and you're like, that's not as good as I thought. I think Doubt actually lives up to the hype. Not that I've read other Pulitzer Prize winning dramas, but...
Yeah, or really much from the Pulitzer Prize list at all. I should pull it up sometime.
I know John Steinbeck was on there.
Yeah.
But anywho, one of the fun facts I like about this author is he's not only a playwright, but also a screenwriter. And two movies that he wrote that you might have heard of are Joe vs. the Volcano.
Excellent.
Which is an old school Tom Hanks movie about him going to die in a volcano because he's a terminal illness.
And isn't actually all that excellent.
Yeah. It's actually kind of horrible. And Moonstruck, starring Cher and Nicolas Cage, of all people.
Which I haven't seen, but I hear is surprisingly good.
Yes. He won Oscar for Best Screenplay, and Cher won an Oscar for Best Actress.
Ah, well, the movie that won Cher an Oscar for acting must be pretty well written.
Yes, the writing is excellent. You can tell it's written by a playwright, too, because there are a couple of scenes that are totally, like, play set pieces. But I would recommend it. And then he also writes plays, but since no one reads plays, you probably haven't heard of any
of those. Or goes to plays, really.
I do.
I know, some people do. In Kansas City, there's not a giant theater-going scene, unfortunately.
I recommend it, though. Go see plays. That's my dictation.
Yeah, go catch whatever. Some theater. I was involved in some local theater a couple years ago.
It's actually good stuff.
It's pretty fun.
And then we basically picked this because we decided to read some plays, and Ben hasn't really read any, so I said, let's read these plays that I like.
So we did.
Yep. So, what is the genre of doubt?
A play.
Yes.
A parable.
It is a play. It is a parable, and that's not just us. That's the title of the full title of the play is actually Doubt, a Parable.
Yes.
So that is the playwright's own words. Plot synopsis?
Father Flynn, creepy or friendly?
And that is what the entire plot revolves around.
Yeah, I was going to make the synopsis just doubt, but I was overridden.
He also came up with one that was a little too creepy about, like, touching people.
And oh, yeah.
Didn't really like it. So, for anyone who hasn't read the play or did not see the movie Doubt that came out in 2006-ish...
Probably he adapted that. For the he screen did himself, adapt that yeah.
For the screen himself. And it stars Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman, so it's pretty good.
Good cast, yeah.
But Sister Aloysius, who is a nun and the principal of a Catholic high school, suspects that the priest there, Father Flynn, might be more than friendly to Donald Mueller, who's the first black kid to ever attend to their school. And she goes on a crusade trying to convince him to confess or get other people to help her prove what he did wrong. And while she arguably wins and arguably loses in the end by getting him to leave the school but not kicking him out of the priesthood, we as a reader or a viewer never actually know if he did it.
You're not left with a lot of certainty, which, you know,
it's probably fitting.
Fits, yeah. And so, let's dig in.
Yep.
I guess, did you mention the setting when you were just giving that?
I did not.
Okay.
So the setting, like we said, is at a Catholic school in the Bronx. And one of the interesting things is, while the whole Catholic Church priests and pedophilia is a really big issue right now, he didn't set it in the modern day when everything's coming to light. Not everything, unfortunately, but a lot more is coming out in the open and people are stepping up. It's set in 1964 instead, which is a little bit after Vatican II, when the Catholic Church decided to start doing masses in English and be a little less medieval. And then also when some people within the church knew this stuff was going on, but none of it had really been put out in the open yet.
Right, yeah, and plus it gives you the extra backdrop of the first black student to be at the school. And the struggle a little bit of old versus new, Vatican I versus Vatican II.
Definitely.
Yeah. I actually just read a reference to that old school Catholicism and another and something else I'm reading right now, but more on that later. Yeah, now let's just
okay.
Well, characters. This will be easy. There are only four.
Mm-hmm. This definitely follows the trend of a lot of modern playwriting, unless you're writing musicals, to only have four or five, maybe six characters in a play. I don't really know why the new style. And my guess is that it's something to do with the fact they don't have to pay as many people.
That would be my guess.
By having a smaller cast.
I mean, if you want to have your play produced and at some independent venue, then it's going to be way cheaper. I mean, shoot, on a place like that, you could be like a little 100-seat theater somewhere. Four versus five actors could probably make the difference between profit and loss.
And Doubt is a play that you could put on a bare-bones stage with four people, and you have everything you need.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't even really need scenery. You just need a couple of benches and a desk.
And that's actually one of the things that really defines this play, as Ben and I were talking about how short it is, and how just completely edited down to the minimum that you need to have the play there.
Yeah, doing that while still feeling that there is depth and conflict and interesting things about the characters. For example, Sister Aloysius.
Yes, who we were supposed to just be talking about.
Who is a stone-cold bitch.
I love Sister Aloysius. Probably surprising nobody.
And when I say stone-cold bitch, I don't mean that as an insult, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she is a hard woman.
Yeah, she's the principal. She's in her late 50s, early 60s. Mm. You actually do find out later in the play that she was married at one point, but is now a nun. And she's the kind of principal and teacher who is the authoritarian. You know, you don't come crying to her when you have a bloody nose because she might accuse you of having punched yourself in the face to try and leave school early.
Right, to get out of class. She's a Catholic nun of the old school. She doesn't think her teachers should be letting the students have fun in class, essentially. She was taking Sister James to task for being too theatrical.
Too enthusiastic about history.
Yes.
She said, oh, well, should I be more enthusiastic about my other subjects? She says, no.
You have to make history clinical. You need to be less enthusiastic about history, not more enthusiastic about everything else. Yeah. And she has this idea that Father Flynn is up to no good, and she is going to hunt it down, like a bulldog.
Yes, she is
relentlessly.
She is the sort of woman who, if you get on her bad side, you had better sit in a room and cry forever, because she will never stop.
No, you won't.
She's convinced something's wrong with Father Flynn, and nothing anybody says will move her off the point one iota.
And she follows all of the rules, all of the decorum for priests and nuns interacting within. Well, she does for appearances, certainly, actually. Uh-huh. That's part of, I guess, what makes her interesting. And so kind of like the two things that run a little bit counter to that old school hardness is one, that what she's doing is ultimately for the good of the student.
Uh-huh.
And not only for appearances.
She's genuinely concerned about him.
Right. Like, she worries about appearances with things like, oh, well, if a male priest is in a room with a female nun, then they need one other person there to chaperone. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the appearance of, oh, well, let's make sure, you know, like, where she could say, this is our first black student, we need to make sure he fits in and we're not rocking the boat. She's pretty willing to rock the boat because she thinks it's in his best interest. And then the other thing is that while she follows the rules of decorum, like, to a T, the actual hierarchy of the church, which is very strict,
yes,
she's willing to short-circuit it within her ability to do so. You know, talking to other nuns rather than going to the Monsignor,
uh-huh,
who she's supposed to report everything to, being willing to talk to folks that are not directly in the line of command, though it does turn out to be a bluff the one time she technically does that. But even that, I mean, it's lying in the service of God, I suppose. But.
And it's, you know, she acknowledges that, well, you need to go report this to the Monsignor. Well, he's friends with Father Flynn and won't listen to anything I say. So she recognizes, you know, her own disadvantages in the system, which is why she ends up manipulating it.
Right. And, I mean, what she does is not so much go outside of the system as just convincing Father Flynn to remove himself from the situation, since she can't have him removed from the situation. Mm-hmm. So Father Flynn himself.
Yeah, so Father Flynn and Sister Aloysius, in addition to, you know, fighting over this issue, are just an exercise in contrasts. So, you know, you have this guy who's really charismatic and really friendly, talking to people, talking about, hey, let's make the church more friendly. Let's include Frosty the Snowman in the Christmas pageant.
Right.
He puts sugar in his tea. He writes with a ballpoint pen.
He has long fingernails.
But he keeps them clean.
He does keep them clean.
And we don't know how long that long is. But
I would assume it's not that long.
Yeah. Probably just by old school standards.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have some, like, crazy goth rocker long fingernails going on.
So, you know, he's open and friendly, he wants to talk to the kids and be buddies with them, and Sister Aloysius is just already predisposed to hate him for all of that.
Yeah, so I mean, some of the conflict, I guess some of the doubt in the mind of the reader that could be set up is that she represents the old school, he represents the new school, maybe she's just holding a grudge about that, and there is nothing going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't drink tea anyway, but 3 or 4 sugars is, like, kind of a lot to put into a cup of tea. That is kind of a lot.
Or, like, if you're, because most Americans are not tea drinkers, but rather coffee drinkers, if you know someone who drinks it black all the time and you put sugar in yours in front of them, they always look down their nose at you just a little bit.
she sees him put sugar in his tea and is just,
how decadent.
Obviously disgusted. Although he is, you know, in turn exercising his authority over her. When he says, hey, do you have any sugar? And she goes, oh, yeah, I put it in this drawer for Lent and forgot to take it out. And he says, oh, must not have been very hard to give up then. Or the fact that he walks in and immediately sits at her desk.
Right. Yeah, that was the big move.
And she can't even say, hey.
Because in the hierarchy of this school, the priests are, even a priest who is an instructor is still higher in rank to the principal of the school, who is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll come back to that in a minute, I think.
Yeah, let's talk a little more about Father Flynn, actually.
Yeah, so I think that a lot of his friendliness, and this is part of what I really loved about the play, was, like, you could read it or watch it once and then decide what you thought and go back and read it or watch it a second time and completely reinterpret some things based on what you thought.
Uh-huh.
Like, him being, the scene where he's being friendly with the boys, and I think there's some big acting decisions and directing decisions you can make here too, because, like, you could play that with exactly that dialogue and have it be just a little too friendly and therefore creepy, or play it really casual and have it seem really innocent, which is probably what you should do.
Yeah, like the good old boys club feel of, yeah, I'm teaching you young boys to subject women. It's cool. It's fun.
But it did feel innocent when I read it. And it wasn't really until the very end of the play where I had serious doubt and was more on Sister Aloysius's side. I was actually thinking even that scene in the office, I think a good way to play that scene, maybe to make Father Flynn seem to, like, cast some doubt, would something about wanting that much sugar in his tea, I feel like you could play that like it was really weird.
Yeah,
like he could enjoy it being that sweet a little too much and make you go, he's a creepy weird person.
Although I think the purpose of the play is to try and make him look as like not creepy and weird as possible.
Oh yeah, I mean, I agree but with that. It's just, like, again, thinking over it in the light of, well, what if he did do it? Like, I could picture some of the things he does coming across
as worse.
Really weird if he played it the right way.
And one of the other interesting things I think about Father Flynn is John Patrick Shanley, when he wrote the play, knew yes or no he did this thing. And he told Philip Seymour Hoffman when they filmed the movie, and I think he might have told, like, the first guy who played Father Flynn. Maybe. I'm not sure about that one. I know for sure he told Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Okay.
And then other than that, pretty much everyone else who plays Father Flynn doesn't even know if they molested a little boy or not.
Has he ever said publicly?
No. He's never...
I didn't think so, based on the way you were describing it. I was just curious.
He's told, like I said, maybe 1 or 2 actors, and then said, you can't tell anybody.
That's fun.
So it's like a total secret.
That's fun.
Yeah. And I just think, as an actor, I don't know if they go into it and decide I'm innocent or I'm guilty and try to play it that way, or if they kind of struggle with not knowing how to portray it.
I'm sure they read the play. And, I mean, even I would assume and hope that's standard practice for being in a play is to read the play.
Hopefully.
But, I mean, even if you didn't, like, this would be one where you should, because it's 58 pages or something like that. Yeah. And the director, obviously, is going to have their idea, too. But, yeah, I mean, you could just, you really, you really don't know, and that's what's so good about it. Should we hit on our other characters real quick?
Yeah.
Or you have something you wanted to add?
No, not for right now.
Okay. That's fine. So, Sister James.
Sister James.
Who is there a little bit as a representative of the new school. More is
as the young, idealistic nun.
Yeah, she's more of a sounding board, I think, for Aloysius than she is anything else.
Well, one of the things I like about Sister James's character is she's only in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And the average age of nuns is something like 68.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
it's... like, it's ridiculously high. And so, even having a young nun at your school is gonna be unusual.
Right.
And, you know, she says, when Sister Aloysius said, oh, I was married, and she says, oh, I've, like, never done anything. I just joined the order, right. You know? Right,
joined the order very young.
So she has that innocence and naivete that kind of gets corrupted a little bit as the play goes on.
Oh, definitely. At the end, I mean, this episode really destroys her innocence. She's saying, I'm having trouble sleeping now. Like, I just can't get it out of my head. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, she feels distanced from her students. She used to love teaching. She doesn't like it anymore. She feels farther away from God. Like, she's just completely thrown into her own doubt.
Yeah, I mean, this poor woman, I actually felt pretty sorry for her by the end. And, I mean, that kind of innocence is something you can never get back.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think you can, over time, come to a much better understanding of what it means to live without it.
She could go to a better place, for sure.
I feel confident, hopeful, that she will get to that better place someday. I kind of wanted to pat her on the shoulder at the end of the play, like, it's going to be all right, Sister James.
Yeah, you're fine. It's okay. Like we said, you know, she's the young teacher. She's too enthusiastic about history, which I understand.
Hey, scored points with both of us.
Yeah.
So that's a good subject to be enthusiastic about.
You know, she wants the kids to feel like they can come talk to her. She's definitely not the old school nun, like when you talk to adults who went to Catholic schools, kids, and they said the nuns were just like, you know, hard asses that they were like all terrified of. She's definitely more like a modern day elementary school teacher.
Someone who went through 21st century education classes where, you know, it's still really important that you not be. It's really important that you not be friends with the students, but you want to have good rapport with the students. They should feel comfortable to come to you with stuff, and you should be, and part of it is, honestly, that they want you to know your students well enough to know when something is wrong with mandatory reporting laws and stuff like that these days, but it's very much that flavor of teacher. You feel like you'd like her to be your teacher.
Yeah.
She's probably the super nice teacher who's trying to make the lessons fun. And
I want to sit on her New Deal lecture.
I feel like occasionally I'd have the little bit of eye rolling like, oh, she's...
she's too friendly.
It's too much. But for the most part, you like the like energy at the front of the classroom is good. Those old depictions of old school Catholic schools where everyone is just sitting there, like, rigidly trying as hard as they can not to twitch, fidget, or start to nod off. Just look horrible. Well, some teacher just drones on in the front of the room.
She's not a big disciplinarian either, because, you know, Sister Aloysius says, you send way less kids to me than the other teachers do. And she says, well, I want to handle that myself in my own classroom. And she's like, no.
Yeah, and by the way, in a school building, if you don't send kids to the office, but your classroom is under control still, that is, like, the best case scenario.
Yeah.
You will never be reprimanded for not sending enough kids to the office. In fact, you can get in trouble for sending too many kids to the office.
Yeah.
There's only one character left to discuss who isn't in the play for very long.
Yeah, her appearance in the play is interesting. I remember when the movie came out, that character's on screen for less than 10 minutes, and she got an Oscar nomination, because people just thought she was, like, awesome. But she just creates a huge stir because she's not on stage or on page for very long, but, like, she just throws, like, a whole new mess of crap into the situation.
Yeah, like, it's really odd. Her reaction to the news she's being given, or the possible news she's being given, maybe, is not what you would expect from a parent, really. Her reaction is basically, well, he needs this to get to a good high school, which he needs to get into college, because barely any black kids get into college.
Uh-huh.
And so, I don't even care if Father Flynn is molesting my son. It's only until June.
Yeah, she says he just has to make it till June. His grades are in the middle of the class. Good enough.
Yep, just needs to graduate. It's only till June. And that's, it was kind of jaw-dropping in the moment.
Yeah, you would think they would say, okay, I'm gonna go, like, talk to them and see if I can get anything, you know, I'm gonna talk to my kids, see if they admit anything,
yeah.
Like, press charges.
It seems like something you would either explore farther, or one of those situations where the parent was immediately, adamantly on one side or the other.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would actually expect her just to vigorously defend Father Flynn more than anything else in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, she does mention, like, you know, he's been good to my boy, protected him from getting harassed at school. And then even kind of blames Donald a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really... Yeah.
I read it that way.
Because he gets kicked off the altar boys for drinking wine, and Sister Aloysius is convinced that Father Flynn gave him wine to drink and get him kicked off. And she mentions the beginning of the conversation was Father beat him when he got taken off the altar boys. And then at the end of the conversation, she says, well, the real reason his father beat him isn't because of that. Because when she says, you don't care if he made advances on your son? She said, well, what if it's in some boys' natures to invite that? Basically
right.
Saying,
his father beat him because he's, you know, that way.
Yeah. Basically saying, well, maybe he's gay and, like, wanted it.
Yeah.
So,
man, it's convenient that the next section we're outlining is issues, because basically all of them happen in that one scene.
Yeah.
And so there's the racial element, which is present. It's not strong, because it's not the point of the play.
Yeah, it's not the most important part. Right.
But
the
it
fact
is there. He's the only black student.
And that does make him, as Sister Aloysius points out, it does make him more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But then also at the same time, if you think Father Flynn is innocent, makes him the perfect candidate to go reach out to, because he is the only black kid at school.
Right. And he's a priest, and he's supposed to reach out to the, you know, downtrodden.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what Jesus would do.
Exactly. Jesus wouldn't touch
them. Well, Jesus wouldn't touch him inappropriate. Inappropriately, excuse me.
Give him a friendly hug.
Yes. And then there's the, oh, well, Donald might be gay? Sounds like...
That's heavily implied.
I mean, sounds
almost
like
almost said outright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the... actually, I guess we didn't mention this earlier, but there's the underage drinking thing.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Because we don't really care about that. But
plus, the Catholic Church doesn't really care about that.
Well, yeah. Then there's, of course, the sexual issues that go with how inappropriate it is, and when the power is that imbalanced.
Uh-huh.
You know, even if Donald is gay, 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 and even if he literally invited Father Flynn's attention, well, guess
highly
what?
Highly unlikely, but yeah, even if he did,
yeah,
Father Flynn should go, no.
Sorry, son.
That's not happening.
There are too many ways that is inappropriate.
Yeah, Father Flynn, what he should really do is go to a gay bar incognito and have consensual sex with an adult man if he really needs to.
Right. Student teacher, not good. Adult, not good.
Yeah.
And that being said, like, it was clearly a situation, and Donald's not very well liked by his peers. How much him being black has to do with that, we don't know exactly. How much him possibly being gay has to do with that, we don't really know. He could just be a really unlikable, awkward kid.
Yeah, which if you're thrown into a new school where you're the only, you're, like, the outcast.
Right.
And it's, like, physically, you know, you're a different color than everyone else, then maybe you're just awkward around everyone because you feel, like, isolated.
Right, yeah. I mean, well, I'm saying it could even be just that he wasn't very well liked at his old school. He just not be very likable.
Maybe he's just kind of a dork.
But he's clearly someone who is weak and vulnerable, possibly in multiple ways.
Uh-huh.
And so he is, and now Sister Aloysius mentions that because of that, he is the ideal target for someone, for a predator.
Yeah.
And
call the weak ones from the herd.
That's right. And I mean, it's very true, though. And that is generally how sexual predators operate.
Yeah.
Let's see. What issues have I left out?
Oh, there's the issue of sexism and the church hierarchy, which we already talked about a little bit. But when Sister Aloysius is talking to his mother, she says, you know, well, have you talked to Father Flynn about it? Yeah, well, he wouldn't admit anything. Will you tell anyone else? She's like, well, I can't really.
Yeah, there's not anything that can be done.
I think she was hoping that she would get Mrs. Mueller on her side and then be able to take a step forward.
Right, yeah. If she has an outside force to back her up. And again, just like any power structure where a male teacher cannot really be reprimanded in a real way, in an official way, by a female principal.
Mm-hmm.
Just
asking for...
Well, it's just not how things work in public school.
Yeah. Or how things should happen ever.
Right. And I don't know how the Catholic hierarchy has shifted to go with more modern attitudes on that, but... I would imagine anyone with the title of principal these days probably has more power than someone with the title of teacher, whether they're a man or a woman. Just a guess, though.
Yeah. If anyone out there went to Catholic school recently, let us know if it's the same or if it's different.
Yeah,
because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, what I know about it comes from movies.
Yeah.
And TV.
Which are notoriously accurate.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, also the occasional piece of fiction, but certainly, yeah, like, when I picture Catholic school, I'm picturing, like, the Blues Brothers going back to their orphanage.
And her beating the crap out of them
with
the ruler. Right. Shit! Oh, fuck! Sister Aloysius would totally beat kids with a ruler.
Yeah, no, she'd be down with that. She could be the Penguin. I guess within those sexual issues still, and this has been covered in pretty good detail outside of our podcast, certainly, but the way that the church handles some of these issues, because at the end of the play, we still don't know if Father Flynn did it. It is implied. Sister Aloysius pulls a bluff where she says she talked to a nun at his previous stop.
And he is pissed.
Yeah, he's really angry, but at the same time, he does what she asked him to. He asks to be reassigned.
Yeah, well, I mean, the conversation's really interesting, because I talked to a nun. Which nun? Doesn't matter. You should have talked to the priest. Or the Monsignor. Why? Because he'll cover up for you?
Yeah.
I've noticed you've been at 3 churches in the last 5 years, and then he basically just says, okay, what do I have to do?
Yeah, he says, you win.
And you don't know if it's because he's trying to protect his reputation, because he hasn't done anything, and he just knows he can't win the fight, or if he realizes if she actually did that, then she has maybe legitimate dirt on him.
Or, yeah, has another bucket full of circumstantial evidence.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty obvious, like, during that conversation, it becomes pretty obvious that life for him will never be comfortable at his current location, though.
Uh-huh.
And so, for that reason, if nothing else, it's worth bailing.
And when he moves, they actually make the, or take the time to note that he technically gets a promotion.
Right.
He gets moved up to, like, a better church.
And obviously, notoriously, the Catholic, many of the Catholic priests involved in these molestation scandals were moved from location to location rather than being punished or handed over to the legal system.
Which is obviously horrifying, because you're just getting moved to a new place, no one knows why you got moved there, and you just have, like, a new crop of children to...
Yeah, it's like if some crazy exotic disease popped up, and instead of putting them in quarantine, you sent them to another city to spread it there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially...
To get them away from you.
Right, just so they're not in the place where all the angry, upset, and hurt people are.
Yeah.
Because it makes it harder for you to get sued that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually pretty awful.
It's, yeah, it's clearly a moral failure to the highest degree. Which is, again, why so many people have been angry with the church in recent years. Including people who are both in the church and out of the church.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's hard to... if you're in a group of people and someone mentions something about Catholicism these days, it is almost always followed up with a comment or a joke about priests molesting children.
Yes.
And the folks who are Catholic that I have known and talked to generally just kind of bow their head in shame and go, this is clearly a terrible issue that we are trying to move past by now handling it correctly.
Yeah.
It's a very shameful episode.
I mean, if you were Catholic, wouldn't you feel just like...
I'd feel terrible. I'd feel terrible.
Yeah.
Obviously. So, and
I understand why they act that way.
Right, and you don't defend that, but you still, you know, like that church, the religion still has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
To someone, it's just a really terrible position for them to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Although
to the Catholic Church's favor, I guess, if you are a pastor in another denomination and you get married and have kids, and you convert to Catholicism, they've actually let married priests join. It's pretty rare, but I think they're moving ever closer to that.
Trying to join the modern world just a little bit more.
Well, more people would be priests if they could get married.
Yeah, and they do have a little bit of shortage of clergy.
Yep.
Nuns more so than priests.
Yep. Well,
that's part of the reason the average age is so high, too. It's because they don't have very many new recruits.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're a 22-year-old girl and they're like, hey, do you want to go join a nunnery where you can't wear any good clothes or, like, use the internet or kiss a boy ever again? Or you could, like, just go, like, hang out and chill at a bar and drink a beer. You're like, well, nothing doesn't sound too appealing.
You're in your 40s and you've made lots of bad decisions.
Yeah.
And you're on your third divorce. Back in with us.
My guess is most recruits are probably women who are like, you know what? You know, my husband's dead. I don't want to have to deal with this anymore. Like, I just want to, like, go live in peace.
If anyone knows any good books on nunning and nunnery, I might be interested to read one. It would be fascinating to get a glimpse into that.
So, I guess the biggest theme in the book, which is probably pretty obvious by now, is doubt.
Yes. the title of the play is Doubt for a Reason. Part of what was so good about this play is that every scene serves to contribute. Because you're either building Father Flynn up or you're tearing him down, and all of the evidence is circumstantial, and the character is, like, no one is certain.
This might have, like Sister James, you know, when Donald came back, he put his head on the desk in a way that just seemed weird.
Right.
But that's, like, all she has. Or Sister Aloysius says the whole reason she started suspecting him in the first place is because she saw him touch a student's wrist and the student pulled his hand away.
Right.
Which could just mean that the kid was like, hey, man, don't touch me.
Hey, a lot of people don't want to be touched.
Yeah, or it could be like...
Especially middle school-aged boys don't want to be touched by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But especially another boy or a man.
Yeah.
And even, like, I don't know, even a girl just tends to make them nervous. Just touchiness is not a well-known
quality. Nothing that 13-year-old boys do. Yeah,
exactly.
Well.
It's just not something 13-year-old boys are good at. Though, to be fair, 13-year-old boys aren't good at very much other than just being 13.
Having acne.
Yeah. Poor kids. I feel for them.
Oh, man. I remember being 13. Not a good time.
I should have just been stuffed into a barrel and released on my 14th birthday. We'll see you in a year, Ben. I know it seems like it sucks, but you'll actually be happier.
Here's
in the
like
barrel.
10 books. Okay, yeah. Bye.
That's right. We'll drop you in a flashlight and a book every couple days.
Yeah. So I mean, this adds to the doubt. Is, you know, says she's convinced, but this evidence she has is he touched a kid's wrist. Donald Mueller, like, put his head on the desk, and maybe he did drink the wine on his own, and...
Right.
I mean, like, there's very little to go on.
They've had some private conversations.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what's going on.
The priests have private conversations with a lot of people.
They should be, if they're doing their job.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, we don't know for sure, and probably the best part of the entire play... is the fact that Sister Aloysius goes on this crusade, is totally evinced, refuses to come off it at all. And then at the end, when Sister James, you know, says, oh, Father Flynn's gone, they talk about it a little bit. And then Sister Aloysius, I don't think she starts crying necessarily, but she's just all of a sudden, like, totally overcome and says, I have such doubts.
I have such doubts, yeah, that...
And that's ends the play.
That floored me.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, that just happened.
Yeah, because now you're like, well, if she doesn't, then...
Yeah, right.
Let's... Ah!
Exactly, because, again, at the end, like, I'd kind of come around to her side of things.
Uh-huh.
Or at least more so than his side of things. And then when she declares that she has such doubts, like, it just almost just threw my hands in the air. Oh, my God. I don't know what to do with this.
What the fuck am I supposed to think now?
This is crazy.
Yeah. Oh, and then the other theme that we talked about a little bit is that old versus new, the Vatican I versus Vatican II. You know, Father Flynn suggests seeing Frosty the Snowman, and Sister Aloysius tells him it's a pagan ritual of putting something magical on a snowman's head. Is just, like, totally dismissive of it.
Oh, man, her takedown of Frosty the Snowman was
pretty funny.
Pretty brilliant.
Yeah. you know, oh, the kids should be writing with fountain pens, ballpoint pens, blah. Like, just freaking out about this stuff that seems totally unnecessary.
Right, stuff that feels innocuous to us. And, I mean, I think that's a theme that exists kind of throughout time. Like, there's always this idea of, oh, well, this generation does this, and our generation did this instead.
Right.
And, I mean, you see it with people my age, even.
God. I know, people my age act like they're 60.
I know.
Like, people can't sit down at the table without texting every 5 minutes. I'm like... down.
Yeah. It's not, in fact, the end of the
also
world.
You check Facebook on your phone like 20 million times a day, so I don't really see where you have the room to talk. Kids these days, they don't know how to talk to each other.
And the more esoteric it gets, the better it gets.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know lots of nerds, and they're like, back in my day, this is how we did nerdy things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, guess what?
My favorite is when people despair over things like, well, when I was a kid, I watched VHS tapes. And now kids don't even know what that is. I'm like, oh, no. Yeah.
Is that really bad? When someone says something like that, I'm always kind of like, so, do you know what phonographs were recorded on?
Yeah, wax cylinders.
Yeah, wax cylinders.
Yeah. That's just because I'm a history buff.
Exactly, but most people wouldn't know that. Who cares? Do you really want to go listen to a phonograph instead of an MP3?
Yeah, also, pop your VHS in and listen to the sound go... and then complain about DVDs some more.
Watch your VHS more than a dozen times and see if the quality doesn't degrade.
Yeah.
And store that thing for...
The machine eats it.
5 years and try to watch it. See if that works.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. But it's kind of the same thing.
It's nice.
It's going on this play.
Right. It's the same concept.
Which is one of the reasons, I think, even though it is... We were talking about, you know, it is set in a Catholic church setting with nuns and priests in the 1960s, but it's not some kind of inaccessible, like, religious people talking to each other in a way that makes you go, like, ugh.
Yeah,
It's the sort of fight, not over the same exact same thing necessarily, but the sort of fight that happens all the time.
Right, yeah, and the whole play really is pretty relatable. It's actually pretty funny, because when we were outlining for this podcast... Gab said, so what kind of religious spiritual issues do we have? And I went, I don't know, there aren't really any.
We're like, wait a minute.
It's like in a Catholic school. the characters are two nuns, a priest, and a mother of a Catholic schoolboy.
Yeah.
Like, how is there no religion?
And they barely even say God, like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, like, the setting, it makes sense for what the setting is, but everything in it is relatable outside of it. It's not like it's not a Catholic play.
No.
Yeah.
And when I tell people about it, you know, it is called Doubt a Parable. The point of the play is to kind of be a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
It's dealing with this big moral issue a lot of people talk about. I mean, you might expect it to be really preachy, especially because, you know, a priest is in it.
Right.
And it's not at all.
Yeah.
That's the surprising thing about the play, is you go into it going, okay, there might be some, you know, pretty obvious preaching going on here, and it's none of it's there.
Or because it seems like it, on the surface, that it would be a Catholic play if there'd been a bunch of theology or philosophy in uh-huh. there. They're, like, quoting Thomas Aquinas
and yeah.
that kind of stuff, and then wouldn't have been shocked by that either. But no, none of that happens. It's just... characters and the information you need for this concept of doubt pretty much condensed uh-huh. to the core of what you need to do it.
And I'm really impressed by that because I think a lot of less experienced writers who really want to show that they're clever would be putting tons of philosophy and theology and quotes in there.
There are a lot of ways you could go about screwing this play.
Mm-hmm.
If I tried to write this play, it would be twice as long and it would be terrible.
Mine would probably end up really bad too.
You at least know how to write a play.
I do. But like at the end, like Father Flynn would admit it and Sister Alice just like punch him in the face
right.
and like turn into like a nun brawl and it'd just be a mess.
That's right. They'd go in a nun brawl.
They'd say fuck way too much.
Someone would get hit with nunchuck.
Turns into a ninja play. That probably would not happen.
But... Ninja nuns. Doubt. A parable about ninja nuns.
About nuns killing people. So anyway, I guess we just covered the strengths and weaknesses of the writing. Not that we think there are really any weaknesses. And we talked about the context and relevance, too.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's all kind of wrapped up together.
Yeah. So, I guess, our question for the play. Did Father Flynn do it?
I think he did.
I've read the play twice and seen the movie twice. And I'm pretty convinced he did it. I think it might just be because I'm jaded. Like, I go into that kind of going, well, I kind of come down on the side of, like, more finger-pointing because it seems like the safer side to take. Even if he didn't do it, at least you're trying to do something about it.
Yeah, like, I come down on the side of there needs to be actual investigation.
Uh-huh.
That being said, I could still be convinced that he is completely innocent. It would not surprise me if that was the correct answer.
Yeah.
Which, again, is just a testament to how well done this was.
Yeah, for sure. So, obviously, we liked it. I think it's one of my favorite plays. I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was impressed. I'm really glad we did it. So, what are you reading right now?
Yeah, so I, in the break between our last two, I read two books in Cancun. One being Will Grayson, Will Grayson, about two teenagers named Will Grayson who meet each other. By John Green and David Levithan. And just in case you don't remember, John Green is author of the famous Fart in Our Stalls. And I also read Delirium by Lauren Oliver, which I believe I mentioned briefly in the Crucible podcast, a book about a society where you get brain surgery when you turn 18 to make you incapable of falling in love. Pretty interesting. And then I'm currently reading another YA novel, because that's all I read now, I guess, called Unwind by Neil Schusterman, about a society that does not allow you to abort babies, but when they turn 13, you can decide to hand them over to medicine and have them harvested for organs, basically.
I'm on a bit of a nonfiction kick. Kind of glad our schedule's been a little sparse because I've been reading the same book for a long time because there was a lot of it.
Uh-huh.
But I finished that, and I don't need to mention it again. But right now I'm reading Unfair. There's a long subtitle on that one. Why the Christian View of Gays Doesn't Work by John Shore, who is himself
Christian.
I think he even uses the word evangelical.
Okay.
And it's a collection of essays by him, as have appeared on his website, along with letters sent to him by readers about their experiences being gay and Christian at the same time. And it's very interesting and obviously is heavily slanted towards a certain point of view that, in my opinion, is the correct point of view. So if you have a problem with that, sorry. Don't even care if you're mad at me right now. And that's what I'm reading.
Yes, I should mention Will Grayson. Will Grayson is also an LGBTQ teen book.
Ah, well, there you go. Of course, if you didn't know that this podcast is gay-friendly, then...
You probably
haven't listened to more than one or two episodes.
Yeah.
It's pretty unlikely. So... if you have anything you want to add to this discussion or just take us to task, then you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can follow us on Twitter or tweet us at novelideaspod.
There is an email account, novelideaspodcast@gmail. No one uses it. Don't feel like you have to.
And like we said at the beginning, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. We are now pretty much the top search result for novel ideas.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
That's right.
We have like 7 ratings and like 3 comments.
That's right.
So, whoop, whoop, whoop. And now that the holidays are done and Ben got his master's degree, we're really hoping to not be skipping every other week anymore.
Yeah, we're reasonably certain we can keep our schedule nailed down. For probably the better part of the next year.
Yeah, we're hoping. I mean, when I start getting into wedding planning, who the fuck knows? But...
well, that's kind of what I was implying.
Yeah.
That should do it. Next week, we are going to be doing Fellowship of the Ring.
By the esteemed J.R.
An obscure fantasy story that no one has ever heard of.
Yeah. by a certain Mr. Tolkien.
So if you like obscure fantasy stories that no one's ever heard of, be sure to tune in for that.
Yeah, we decided not to do The Hobbit because,
it's just, yeah, it's fluff, whatever.
Yeah, it's a kid's book.
Whatever.
like we degrade children's books.
I know, we love children's books.
But we just decided we wanted to do something a little beefier.
So, yeah, join us for Fellowship of the Ring. I guess you could even just watch the movie if you felt like it, but...
it's pretty close.
It's pretty close.
You'd miss out on the wonder that is Tom Bombadil.
It's arguably better. We'll talk about
we'll talk about that next week.
It's hard. These are definitely books you can't really talk about without talking about the movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be next week, and I guess that means we're done, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.